Contrary to Dr. Watson's chronicles, the biggest drawback to Sherlock Holmes's character wasn't his use of cocaine, or smoking shag tobacco, or his admittedly somewhat accurate view of himself as vastly more intelligent than the entire rest of the human race. No, I decided within a week of knowing him that the real trouble with Sherlock Holmes was that he had no switch to turn his mental powers off and on. Entering into conversation with him was like being a butterfly and asking to be skewered by an entomologist's pin. If you spoke to Sherlock Holmes, you placed yourself under the fierce lens of his scrutiny, inescapably. It made him an excellent detective. As a father, however, it made him more than slightly maddening. At the moment, he was fixing me with a keen gray gaze that felt as though it could penetrate clear to the back of my skull.
I understand that you're seeing Constable Kelly tonight.
How? I demanded. How can you possibly know that? We were standing in the sitting room of number 221A Baker Street, where I had been living for the past 2 months. In fairness, it would probably have been easier to keep secrets from Holmes if I had not been living directly downstairs from his own address of 221B. But despite my best efforts, the thought of returning to the flat I kept in Exeter Street still made my skin crawl. No, wait, don't tell me. I let my eyes travel across the room. While I haven't yet changed clothes, the boots I intend to wear are standing ready by the door. I've redone my hair 3 times, which is far more trouble than I usually take with it, as evidenced by the scattering of hairpins on my dressing table. And the corner of the music I intend to give Becky tonight is visible at the top of my handbag. It was 5 o'clock on a September evening, which meant that my curtains were drawn against the fog that crawled through the London streets outside. The gas jets above the mantel were lighted, their glow patching Holmes's hawk-like countenance with shadow and throwing his sharp, intelligent features into relief. He gave me a calm look.
While all those indicators are, now that you mention it, entirely true, in this case, my knowledge stems from the telephone call I received earlier from young Miss Kelly. She wished to make sure that you would be coming to St. Giles tonight.
I blew out a breath, silently counting to 10 inside my head. It was not Holmes's fault that I had spent much of the past 10 weeks alternately feeling as though my skin was stretched too tight with the effort of containing my frustration with life in general, and then, at other moments, jumping at every noise and seeing an intruder lurking in every shadow. Holmes was still watching me.
How is Constable Kelly faring?
He's fine. If struggling to adjust to a life of having a badly damaged leg could be considered fine. He says that he's managing. Holmes's expression didn't change exactly, but the look in his gray eyes told me that he was no more convinced by Jack's statement than I had been.
I will turn my attention to thinking what may be done for him.
Have you any thoughts on what may be done for him? Ordinarily, I would respect Jack's privacy too much to consult with Holmes about him. But at the moment, I was willing to try anything. Holmes's brow furrowed. He was wearing an elaborately patterned silk dressing gown over shirt and trousers, which I took to mean that he wasn't currently involved in any cases.
My own sovereign remedy springs to mind.
He spoke half to himself. I think Jack has troubles enough without your encouraging him to become addicted to cocaine.
That was not the solution to which I was referring.
Holmes was silent a moment, as though pondering something, then turned his attention back to me.
And how are you faring?
Fine, also fine. Holmes's eyebrows rose slightly, but he didn't question my answer. He had no need to.